ZDOT, Thinking Out Loud in Color, February 9th, 2005. I'm Tim Shadle. Welcome back to ZDOT. Today we're going to be continuing the discussion we started a little earlier on spring, and we're going to be focusing a little on a little bit different aspect of spring today. A lot of what I'm covering here really is just kind of a quick overview of the different pieces that spring has, the way that you can use them. And it's really a mainly geared to help you, give you an idea of how it can be used, and hopefully to encourage you to get more information on your own. Spring documentation is excellent, and recently there's just been a couple books that have come out about it. We've been using the Spring Live book from Matt Rabel for quite some time, and we've found it to be fairly informative. I haven't looked at the Manning publication yet, but it looks I've always been impressed with their work in general. So today I wanted to talk a little bit about the idea of templates. Spring uses the template pattern from the Gang of Four book, Design Patterns. And it's basically an object-oriented pattern that takes a shot at establishing an object to perform a particular set of operations in a particular order, and also offers an opportunity to customize specific steps. So, for example, one of the places that Spring uses this template idea is in doing JDBC code. If you read one of Ron Stewart's books, the first red one there, the J2EE Design and Development, he talks about this concept in detail. And the JDBC template class provided by Spring is a helper class that you can use to simplify your JDBC code. So normally when you want to connect to the database from your Java code, you first of all set up some variables of the connection, and then in your try catch block you've got to do a lot of the handling of establishing the connection, getting you've got to get your prepared statement, then you know, you execute the prepared statement, get your result set back, and iterate over the result set. All the while, each of these methods could be throwing a SQL exception. You have to deal with a lot of repetitive work. A lot of the stuff that you end up doing is just very standard. So what the JDBC template aims to do is simplify your code by pulling out the standard stuff that is defined that you have to do every time. You know, step one, get the connection. Step two, get the result, the prepared statement set up. Step three, get the parameters into the prepared statement. Step four, execute the prepared statement. And step five, iterate over the result set. So the JDBC template pulls all that kind of redundant work out for you and gives you a few convenience methods you can work with. So for example, you can actually execute a SQL statement in a single method call. It'll run out to the database, set up, it'll use an existing connection or whatever, execute the statement, and bring you back the result set. You can actually have a statement written specifically that returns like a single int column, and it optimizes all the handling of the exceptions, and it'll cast those, it'll throw runtime exceptions that state what SQL statement was running at the time, and turn it into a runtime exception for you, so you don't have to catch the JDBC block, log it, and then throw the exception, which is often the case. And Rod Johnson's got a really in-depth discussion in his book about runtime exceptions versus checked exceptions. But the focus that I wanted to cover here today is really the template side of things. So that's one template class. The other template class that is really especially helpful in Spring that we use very frequently is the Hibernate DAO support class that has a Hibernate template. And this class we use when we're combining our work with Spring along with that of Hibernate. A lot of Hibernate has a lot cleaner interface than JDBC, but it still has some things you've got to do every time. You've got to set up a Hibernate session. You've got to set up the call to actually run the HQL, and if you get a collection back, you've got to do a get list call. So Hibernate, Spring again, makes these functions a lot easier by adding methods that lets you just hand it a particular HQL query, and it will do all the session management for you. It'll execute the HQL, it'll get that back the results, and it'll do a dot as list or get list call for you. So in doing this kind of in offering these kinds of classes, Spring really gives you a whole different set of paradigms really to work with in the way that you do your code. And a lot of people have been doing this in their own code for a long time. I mean, really, you look at, you know, the fifth or sixth time you've written a class to execute a silly JDBC statement, and you begin seeing the code duplication, and it's just natural to want to pull these out. And in a lot of these ways, the frameworks that we see coming out today just are in many ways common sense kinds of stuff we've been doing, but a lot of times we really haven't been consistent on, or we've done different ways than in one job than they did in another job. And so I think one of the benefits you get with Spring is the fact that these kinds of common templates, these kinds of common refactorings, if you will, are really pushed up into a framework layer that can then be common across a lot of different projects. Updates and improvements to that set of common templates can be put in one spot and can be quickly and easily shared to a new project. So the templates are a really good starting point for a lot of different work. They've got templates for all sorts of stuff. I mentioned the JDBC. They've got templates for the Hibernate. They've also got templates for JMS sending. And that actually brings up an interesting point to discuss about some of the cons of templates. You got to be aware of what kinds of things are going on in the templates. For example, we were using JMS for a particular project about 6 months ago, and we wanted to send a lot of messages, like 300,000 messages to a queue. And when we went ahead and used the Spring template to load up the JMS client to, you know, locate all of the different queues and such, because Spring allows us, we talked about the Bean Factory a couple days ago, because Spring allows you to do so much configuration in the XML file through the Bean Factory, there's a whole lot of Java code and the repetitive JNDI lookups that really get pulled out of the picture, and your code looks so much cleaner when you use one of these Spring templates. But, you know, we went ahead and used one of these, and it was so slow for that particular call. We just couldn't believe it. When we looked into it, we found that the template was making a new JMS connection for every time we wanted to make a call out to JMS. Now, that's fine for most of the time that where you want to just send a one-off message, but we were sending a large amount of messages in a very short amount of time. And so we actually ended up instead moving to a threading model. The idea is that you should be aware of the kinds of steps that are being taken in the templates that you make use of. So with the JDBC templates and the Hibernate templates that we've used, we have not run into any performance issues at all related to the template work, and we've been very happy, actually quite happy, with the way that it simplifies our code and cleans things cleans things up. We went through in the training classes I mentioned, the last podcast, we went through and did one example in Hibernate where we showed a couple of different types of queries done in strictly with the Hibernate API and the kinds of checks and the setup for the session factories, the Hibernate session setup. And then we showed what happened when you use the Spring template. And it was really interesting to be able to point out to the people, and with a good example, that the class that was doing, that needed to call on Hibernate to do the database lookup work, it really was able to get rid of all the kinds of code for session management, for exception handling that it really couldn't do anything useful with. It just had to log it and move on. And so the classes that we were looking at were like 60% of this kind of code that wasn't directly related to the purpose of the class. And that's when the points about Spring that I find really helpful, really intriguing, is that these types of these groupings of classes, the Bean Factory that we talked about the other day, and the templates that they offer that we talked about here, really offer a way to get the code out of your class that isn't central to its functionality. And that's one of the points of the design purposes of Spring that I really like. And so it's a good set of libraries to look into. Obviously, not everything's going to solve every problem, and it's important to make informed decisions. But I think it's definitely a library with a lot of different types of abilities to offer, a lot of different things to bring to your, to improve the design of your code. I really think it's a good idea to look at. Tomorrow or Friday, we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the AOP things that Spring brings. Specifically, we're going to be looking at transaction management and the proxy factory stuff that they have, and how we use it at work to be able to do some good declarative transaction management, and some of the ideas behind that that also can give you some declarative security capabilities. So in the meantime, check out springframework.org and start diving into the documentation. And if you're familiar with Struts, I'd really recommend you take a look at the Spring Live book that's put out by SourceBeat. It's written by Matt Rabel. I think I'm saying that right. He's a web developer that's done stuff in a lot of contract situations. So it's the sample chapter, if you're familiar with Struts, the sample chapter that's out there in PDF format really goes through in, I think, a very good fashion that introduces you to the concepts of Spring. And the sample chapter goes everywhere, goes completely from the database layer all the way up through the web layer, where he shows how to integrate Spring with Hibernate, how to write tests for your Spring and Hibernate integration, how to then move on and write a service layer for your web application so that's, you know, not dependent on the web classes. And then he goes ahead and adds the controller layer on your web and the UI layer and the validation framework. And he really ties it all together in a simple application that does a user management. Add a new user with this first and last name, whatever. It's a really simple application, but the way that he goes about it, I think, is a good brush over a lot of the different kinds of pieces that are available in Spring, including the transaction management that we're going to be talking about in our next podcast. So if you haven't gone through that PDF and you're really itching to get your hands on writing some Spring code, I really suggest you sit down with that for a couple hours and just pound out the code that from the PDF. You can download the code from the website of the book as well. But pounding out the code from the PDF was one of the things that I really liked. It gave me a hands-on feel, and it's kind of one of those things that once you get into it, once you do it, you really kind of get a sense for how all this kind of stuff can work. And then after that, diving into the Spring documentation really isn't so daunting. You've got a sense of where things are and how they fit together. Otherwise, the big PDF that comes with Spring can really be a bit overwhelming when you first start reading about the Bean Factory, and it gets into all the details about how you can use constructors instead of setter methods and all sorts of stuff. So I'd really recommend the example application that comes with that sample chapter of the Spring Live book. So anyway, I hope that was a good intro to Spring's template capabilities for you, kind of whet your appetite a little bit to dive in and read a little more about it. And it's been good talking to you, and I'll talk to you later. Have a good few days, and we'll see you at the next podcast. Stay subscribed. If you've got something to say, go ahead and leave a comment on the weblog at timshadle.com, or send me an email at z.feedback@gmail.com. I look forward to your comments.